Let's get some proverbial pep into your metaphorical step. Start with this, a podcast featuring Night Vale creators Joseph Fink and me, Jeffrey Craner. Each episode, we discuss a topic, then give you two assignments, something to consume and something to create. Start with this dialogue.
Art is hard. Starting is hard. If you want to start somewhere, you can start with this. You can start with this.
We can't teach you everything you need to know about writing good dialogue. I'm not even sure as podcast writers we've really demonstrated a lot of our own dialogue writing skills. Night Vale is mostly monologues.
As are Alice is Dead and Within the Wires.
I've written a ton of dialogue, though, when I was writing plays.
And we've written a lot of dialogue into our novels, but with podcasts, I mostly prefer solo storytelling.
Me too. I feel like there should be a conflict here.
Oh, you would.
That was excellent, thank you. So what should we discuss when it comes to dialogue writing?
Dialogue is applicable to all types of writing. It's hard to cover it all, but we will talk a bit about what works for us and what we think is good dialogue.
Yes, and we'll discuss how it differs between playwriting, fiction, podcasting, and prose.
We'll also tell them to not do that.
Do what?
Write questions that only exist to set up narrative exposition.
Touché. Hey, it's Jeffrey.
And it's Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
Hi there.
Let's talk about dialogue. Dialogue is fun. I like dialogue. Dialogue is hard in a way that all writing is sort of hard, but I've always found dialogue particularly difficult, even though I enjoy attempting to write it. It's fun for me to try to find those different beats, find different personalities. There's a lot you can do with dialogue that is really fun. Let's ask with like just a broad question, and we'll start drilling down from there. But like, what makes compelling dialogue for you?
I was just thinking about this while you were talking of like what makes good dialogue, and it's such a varied answer because like any piece of writing, dialogue has a lot of purposes to exist. You know, in one sense, I think what makes dialogue intimidating, right, is that the narrative portions of our writing can be entirely in our voice, and that's fine. It can be the same voice the entire time. But with dialogue, that's your characters talking, and so you have to figure out, does this sound like my character? It's not supposed to sound exactly like me. It's supposed to sound like this other person, and that can be intimidating. And that is one form of good dialogue. You know, there are people that really every single character sounds entirely different. They have their own verbal tics and their own viewpoint of the world, and that is incredible dialogue writing. But I also think that there's some people where most of their dialogue sounds exactly like the rest of their writing, and I think that's fine because the dialogue is there for something else. The dialogue can be there to be funny. The dialogue can be there to expand on a point. So I think a dialogue is good when it works within the story it is telling, period.
I love that. Like every answer to like, how do I do this writing thing? And you're like, well, you'll just sort of know. Like that's the hardest part about that.
Yeah, because it comes down to there is, despite what some people will want to tell you, there is no right or wrong way to write. There just is writing that works for what you're doing. And so like anything, the dialogue that is good is the one that furthers what you're trying to do with a piece.
Yeah. I was just thinking visually. So you and I, when we write Night Vale, we write in basically like 12-point font in Microsoft Word, slightly more than single spaced. And so if we're going to write an episode to send to Cecil to have him record, it's 12-point font. We'll up that to like 14-point if it's for a live show because it's just easier to read. So like we'll do this with like 1-inch margins, right? Like it's real, just whatever the default in Microsoft Word is, that's how we write it. And it is mostly Cecil talking. And even if we have a guest on, you bring on the faceless old woman, or you bring on Carlos, or you bring on Tamika Flynn, they also kind of talk in large chunks of paragraphs. Like it's all very prosy, even if it is dialogue. And I remember when our like a year and a half into our show, we did a crossover show with the Thrilling Adventure Hour. And those guys are all screenwriters. Those Ben and Ben who write that show are screenwriters, and they use Final Draft, and they put our prose, or our dialogue, which reads like prose on the page, into Final Draft. And so If you know anything about Final Draft, you know that it is formatted for dialogue to be about 3 inches wide right down the middle of the page. And so Cecil, anytime he talked, was just a long vertical strip down the page. And all of the other Thrilling Adventure Hour characters, theirs was like one sentence, 10 words. Mm-hmm. That's basically it. So it was a very comical looking script once you factored that in. There is no right way to do it. It's not to say that, like, wow, there's this... You know, their dialogue is so much zingier than what we're trying to do in terms of the sense of humor. But I always love that visual, just how different dialogue can look on a page.
I mean, right now, weirdly, right now I'm doing a rewatch of two shows, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and The Wire. And those have very different dialogue because The Wire is this very carefully researched thing where he's trying to make sure that everyone talks the way they talk in real life, that they're using slang that is appropriate for who they are, that the police sound like police, that the politicians sound like politicians, that the drug dealers sound like drug dealers, that everything is perfect and accurate. And Buffy, everyone is just telling jokes. Everyone is there as a way to kind of be giving zingers, and they both work. I mean, those are both shows that have huge followings, that are very memorable shows, that have diametrically opposite approaches to how to write dialogue.
It's sort of interesting, like the sitcom approach, like the classic like network primetime sitcom is this, that you need a joke every three sentences, essentially. I forget the phrase, but it is a rigid structure, much like we have another episode where we talk about poetry, and that there's some like real rigid structures to certain forms of poetry, and there's some real rigid structures to how you write dialogue. We should break down that it's a really wide-ranging topic. There are screenplay, and there is also sort of subgenres of that, but then there's also stage play. And in those, every line of dialogue really has to move the plot forward. Speaking particularly of screen and stage plays, like the whole story is told through visual and dialogue. There is rarely a narrator. And even if they are, they're sort of a character in and of itself. That phrase, and I remember learning this in theater in college, in playwriting classes in college, which is every line has to move the plot forward. The fuck does that mean?
Kind of nothing. Yeah, it reminds me of advice I once read from the great writer Shirley Jackson, in which she said every line in a story must either further the story or deepen the character. And that is true to a point. I think if you do that, it's going to work. I also think that if you don't do that, it's fine. Lots of great writers have entire sections that are just there to be beautiful or just there to be funny. And that's fine. I think it's the same thing with a play. Yes, in traditional play writing, because the only thing that the audience has is what the people are saying to each other, they don't generally have a narrator letting you know this is what he's thinking when he does this. The action all happens in the dialogue, in the same way like what a car chase is to an action movie. A like really stunning line of dialogue is to a play, one that like swerves the play in a new direction. But I also think that I've seen some really good plays with lines that are just pretty, yeah, or lines that are just funny. This is an episode where we're trying to give general advice on dialogue, but I think it comes down to it's really tricky to do that because dialogue has so many forms and so many uses. I also think of like, and I apologize if this is jumping forward in your notes, but dialogue in things like prose, in novels, or in short stories, or anything else written like that. I remember, I think it was Stephen King, it might have been someone else of that kind of level of very famous writer, was writing about dialogue, and his point was, think about when you're reading a book, and you're a little bored, and you start skimming. He's like, you might skim the paragraphs of description, but you never skip the dialogue, do you? And I thought that was a really interesting point.
Yeah.
We inherently put value to dialogue. It feels like something we can't skim past.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a character speaking for themselves, which is super important. I wanted to second what you're saying about every line needs to be important. I think it's really a matter of the question of, like, why is this line here? Like, is this line funny? Is this line beautiful? Is this line just sound good? Sometimes it's fine if something just sounds good. It's the thing that keeps you as a reader from skimming past it. Like, I really love the way this is phrased. I'm enjoying just every lilt of every sentence. This is a fun ride for me, even if I'm not learning more about who the murderer is or something like that. In talking about we'll talk briefly about writing for not the listener or the viewer or the reader, but the actor, which is how much do you... How much do you feel like you have taken in over time of like how much the actors change what you do? Not change the words, but like change what you thought the line meant.
Actors obviously will bring, a good actor will bring something to the writing that wasn't in the writing. But I also think it's not fair to the actor to ask them to carry the writing. If you hand them bland writing, a really good performer might be able to find something in that that makes it feel better than it was. But it's still not doing your part of it. I think good writing should stand on its own before an actor gets to it. Good writing should feel complete and interesting entirely without an actor performing it, because then an actor doesn't have the job of making it interesting. An actor has a job of bringing it over the top, of adding something that makes it from interesting to super memorable. But you want it to, you know, I've said this so many times that good writing shouldn't need to be acted. An actor can bring something to it that puts it over the top, but good writing, somebody can just read it and read it without emoting, and the writing itself should carry it. And so you want to make sure you're doing that. That's not always the case. I think, sorry, you know, I do this podcast with John Darnielle. I only listen to Mountain Goats, and anytime I give a generality about art, he immediately jumps on it to explain, because he hates generalities about art. And so now I just instinctually am jumping on myself. You know, there's things you can do where, for instance, there's fun acting games where, like, say you're only saying the same phrase over and over, but you're trying to bring different emotions to it to tell a story. And that's a fun acting game. But I think almost every time, unless you are playing a game around that, you want to make sure that the dialogue you give anyone, that anything you give anyone to perform, stands on its own as interesting, that they don't have to bring all the interest in their performance.
Sometimes you can write poorly and have an actor like dig you out of a thing. Poorly is too strong of a word. I was just thinking of there was just something where it was just a throwaway line where we had written dialogue for Cecil and Carlos for a live show, and Dylan Marin, who plays Carlos, was going to be there to perform at that one. And I think I'd written that part, and I just said something like, as it in, you know, introduces the scene, I just kind of had like chit chat to start. And it was Carlos saying to Cecil, it was like, it's good to hear from you. I was hard at work. And then the way Dylan said the line on stage, he's like, it's good to hear from you. I'm hard at work. And I'm like, well, he didn't go off script at all, and that's amazing. He added something truly wonderful to this scene. Real quickly, I wrote down just a couple, and we'll go through these quickly. We don't have to do full reviews, but I was just thinking about podcasts that I think are great to listen to that do a really good job of dialogue. Like Thrilling Adventure Hour and Wooden Overcoats, I think, are really great for the fast-paced zingers. Like, they're really great one-liners. They move so quickly. Scottish podcast you introduced me to, I just feel like they have like natural dialogue. The way friends talk to each other is so solidly performed and written in that show.
It definitely feels like you are listening to actual conversations, which I just want to point out does not mean it was written like actual conversations. Like, it is a thing of sometimes in order to make something sound like a real conversation, you have to write it kind of artificially. But
and then also you have shows like more stylized shows like Steal the Stars, which is like quickly paced, like it's like sci-fi noir style writing. Like, everything really
very
is
plot focused,
very plot focused and very well executed. And The Shadows is so the CBC documentary is so textural, it's so emotive.
One that is similar to Steal the Stars in its kind of very plot focused, every line moves everything forward, is Immunities, which similarly has that same kind of, it's a sci-fi thriller, and the dialogue is there to kind of constantly move you forward.
That's a great one too. In literature, a few people that I've read before that I just came to mind. I haven't read them in a while, but they're people that came to mind. I think Douglas Adams is tremendous, and I think he's super funny and super wry. Most people are familiar with him. I always thought Toni Morrison did a fantastic job of writing characters that I think say things that are truly profound, but in a voice that feels natural and normal and doesn't feel like I'm a heightened literary writer and all of my characters sound like me. They sound supernatural. And then James Ellroy for that classic sort of like noir, quick-paced, every line maybe sounds the same. All the characters have a similar voice to them, but the patter is great, and it's super easy and super fun to read.
One I want to bring up as sort of an interesting example is, and I never quite know how to pronounce this name, so I'm just going to spell it out. It's the Chinese writer. His first name is spelled C-I-X-I-N Lu, Chixin Lu. Mm-hmm. And he wrote The Three-Body Problem, and it's a trilogy. His dialogue is very utilitarian. Like, it's there to expound on ideas. A lot of times his dialogue doesn't have a lot of flavor of the character that's telling it. And partly this is in translation, so maybe it's not quite this way in the original Chinese. It also, I love those books completely, and it works. And so there is this thing of, like, dialogue works when it fits the story. In his case, the dialogue is not snappy. It does not have the distinctive voice of the character. But because he uses the dialogue to expound on these really, really interesting ideas, the dialogue works perfectly for what it is.
So I want to talk a little bit about going back to the statement earlier, because I do want to give some practical things to think about when creating dialogue and why to create dialogue and what to do there. So we talked earlier about every line doesn't have to move the plot forward. Maybe it doesn't even have to develop a character. It could just make the story sound good or read well on the page. But what should we be considering? Like, as we're structuring, if we're going to, let's speak here for podcast and prose writers, where you're not telling a story entirely through dialogue. What is it, for a prose writer, what is it that you, if you decide to take it out of the author or narrator's voice and into the character's voices, why do you do that? What is it that sparks you to move over into dialogue?
It's the best way of encountering the character, of really getting to know the character. You can go into their head and tell them all of their thoughts. But ultimately, my belief, and this is really bringing my belief to it, is that a person is not what they think. A person is what they say, what they do, and how they relate to other people in the world. And so it's the same with characters. You can spend pages inside a character's head, and that's something. But I think you learn a lot more by having that character talk to someone else, seeing how they treat them, seeing how they talk to them, the kind of words they use, and also giving them, and this is getting outside dialogue a little bit, but giving them choices and seeing the choices they make. Watching a character make a decision and talk about that decision can tell you way more about a character than a chapter-long dive into their memories.
I was thinking about the idea of, like, we were working on a Nightvale novel recently, and I remember there was a moment where I just, like, it was just one sentence of, like, whether it needed to be dialogue or narration, but it was just a moment where the character, the narrator, agreed with, he mentions, and then I agreed with that person, you know, I agreed with him. And then I wrote it, I changed that line to, yes, I said. And then I'm like, why would I even do that? Like, because the playwright in me, I think, is thinking, like, oh, give the actor a chance to accentuate that. And I'm like, oh, the reason I switched it to yes was because it has to do with how affirmative she is. It's not just that she agreed. There's a way in which she does agree. So then you have to decide, can I put that in her dialogue? Do I just add an adverb of how she agreed with somebody? Or do I just need to go back to prose? And so these are the questions you start asking yourself. Yes, I said, tends to not be that compelling of a line of dialogue, but it does have to do with maybe what came before it. So if I had, there was a long silence as I stared at my shoes. And finally, yes, I said, like, there's something to that point of making a decision.
I mean, one of the most famous lines from Joyce is, I'm not going to quote it exactly, but it is built around the phrase, yes, I said.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, here, keep talking. it's literally the last line of Ulysses.
I've never read Ulysses. I can't decide if that's what I'm going to go to my grave having never read that book.
So the whole thing is this man going around Dublin, and the last chapter goes to the point of view of his wife waiting for him to return. And I'll just read this. Then he asked me, would I say yes to say yes, my mountain flower? And first I put my arms around him, yes. And I drew him down to me so he could feel my breasts, all perfume, yes. And his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said, yes, I will, yes. It's one of the most famous last lines in literature, and it is built around, I said yes.
Never heard of it. Did you say James?
Yeah.
Last name James?
Jimmy Joyce.
Jimmy Joyce. Okay, great.
He also has a subway. He has a line of sandwich shops. Sorry, that was a deep cut.
I love it. I honestly wasn't even thinking of that. I was just trying to think of, like, a simple line of dialogue. But I think reading that is a great example of kind of what I was talking about. Like, there's a buildup to that, right? Like, that makes more sense. Carrying on some just, like, simple form of dialogue. And obviously, that's that seems masterfully done. I haven't read the book. I'm sure it's great. I hear it's very good.
I've heard many opinions on it.
Chef's kiss.
Everyone has their beautiful, special Ulysses opinion.
Please send us your opinions on Ulysses ASAP. Well, okay, so coming back to this, which is the choices that we make in doing a dialogue in prose writing, which is, in what ways can you use dialogue to develop a character beyond just what they say or what they say they're doing or what they say about other people? Like, is there some other form of that? Like, I was thinking about, like, I used the example of Toni Morrison, which is where, but there's a lot of writers that do this too, which is you can write in vernacular. Scottish podcasts is another thing that I mentioned earlier, which is there's just a naturalism to it. They find the writing of the way people actually speak, or simulate it in a way that sounds like it's the way people actually speak. Yeah, I was just thinking about that in terms of vernacular.
Yeah, I think that is an astounding skill that I don't understand. You know, David Mitchell is an amazing writer that we talked about in the poetry episode, or will talk about. I don't know the order these will come out, but he also is incredible at every one of his characters speak in the vernacular that they would have spoken, and every one of his characters sound completely different. I find that such an intimidating skill. And so I think one helpful thing I want to share here is that we now have two Night Vale novels, and I also have an Alice novel, all three New York Times bestsellers people seem to like. I don't feel confident at all in my dialogue writing ability, mainly because I don't have any of that ability to capture vernacular. I just don't have it in me to write something that captures the exact phrasing and rhythm of various people's speech, and it can feel very intimidating, but I still can write dialogue that works. And so I think that that is a big thing to take is your dialogue doesn't need to be perfect, and it doesn't need to stand up to the true masters of vernacular dialogue. It just needs to work within your piece. And that comes out of a lot of trial and error. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to share of like, I have three novels behind me now, and I still feel very insecure about my own dialogue writing ability.
I'm glad you bring that up because it's a thing where when we wrote the first Welcome to Night Vale novel, I remember there was, I don't remember what scene it was or what was happening, but there was a passage of dialogue in there. And I remember feeling very good about it because it was kind of it was that vernacular, like common natural back and forth that people might have. And I thought, I think you can make this really compelling as a playwright. I think about how compelling dialogue like that can be. And I remember we didn't have a ton of notes on that first novel. You know, they were more like broad questions, but one of the few like specific notes was like the dialogue on page one, blah, 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 feels a little long. I have some suggestions on how to cut that down. It was the whole passage that I had written. And I remember feeling really awful. Like, have I forgotten how to write dialogue? But I realized like over time writing more prose, because I hadn't spent a ton of time writing prose before Night Vale. I mostly written plays. And dialogue that's going to be spoken by actors is very different than dialogue on the page. And I think one of the things that working with you and the way I see the way you edit, particularly in the novels, which is that I think you do a great job of in your dialogue writing, is keeping it very simple, of not over flourishing what's happening. Because reading it off of the page, we're not flourishing it in our heads as readers. We are just reading it straight through. There are just little touchstones of maybe saying a y'all to imply a regionality of where that person's from, but that may be all you need. You don't have to like put an apostrophe, I-N apostrophe for all the ing words. You don't have to overdo it. You don't have to overperform it as a prose writer. I think keeping it simple and just knowing what that line is supposed to say. And I think you do a really great job of that. Maybe you feel differently if an actor is speaking them out loud, but I think the simplicity of prose is really important, and knowing when to stop your dialogue.
Yeah.
No, it's great. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I will just say, like, that is the way I've found to work with it, is I work with my skills. Mm-hmm. I don't have it in me to write vernacular dialogue or dialogue that really sings as dialogue. So what I do is I write dialogue that fits, that serves the story I'm telling, that builds to a more memorable story as a whole. And maybe people reading my book aren't like, he's a master of dialogue. And that's okay, because really, I just want you to be swept up in the story. And so I do tend to keep my dialogue pretty simple, because mainly I'm just using it to build something larger with it. You know, and that's the thing. If you feel really confident in capturing people's voices, really dive into that. Or if you feel like you're very funny, then maybe really snappy, funny dialogue is for you. But I think as with anything, writing towards what you're trying to do and what you're good at is really the key.
Let's just do a quick fire, just a couple more points that I wanted to hit on here, and I'll try and keep them very brief. But I just wrote down a few things of like, just some like, I think like traps in dialogue writing, these aren't universally no-nos. It's just more a matter of just question yourself when you are writing a dialogue. One is using dialogue only to set exposition. In some genres, this works really well. But for the most part, just having somebody say, "Hey, what are you doing out here?" and then having the person respond. There's probably a better way to get more quickly to why somebody is being out here.
Yeah, I mean, that's a useful way of doing dialogue, but you have to find a better way of doing it that's less clumsy and clear to the reader. I think about my mom used to read these Jewish mysteries. That was like a rabbi that solved mysteries. And the Jewish characters were constantly explaining Judaism to each other because it was supposed to be books for a general audience. And so they were constantly being like, "As you know, on Passover, we don't eat leavened bread." And it's that "as you know," and you'll see that where people are explaining things to each other. Well, they'll be like, "Yeah, I know you're going to jail tomorrow because of this charge. And now you're trying to do," and it's, you can feel it. So I think just understanding, okay, I need this dialogue to get this across, but just trying to find a less blunt way of doing that.
Yeah. And it's almost impossible to totally avoid that. You do have to have the, you know, "Oh, I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for these meddling kids" sort of speech sometimes in a mystery or something. But yeah, just find your new way. And I think my general rule is anytime a character asks a question, I should ask myself, is the question necessary or can I just answer it right away for the reader?
And also, does that character already know the answer?
Yeah.
Because if so, why are they asking that question?
Right. I think the other thing too is one thing I get myself into this trap is focusing too much on cleverness, thinking that dialogue has to be sharp and clever. If that's what you're writing, I think that should be your goal. If you're doing a wooden overcoat style, fast-paced comedy that is witty and dry, I think, yes, do that. But for the most part, I think of it as functional.
Yeah, a lot of fiction podcasts, and I'm not going to call anyone out by name, but there is this tendency to feel like you need at least one person who's there to do zippy one-liners, to be kind of the clever one-liner person. And I think more often than not, that ends up detracting. You know, with something like Wooden Overcoats, that is the goal of the thing. It's essentially a sitcom, and so there it works. But if you're trying to do something else, if you're trying to build a tone of horror or suspense or drama, having somebody there who's telling jokes and is only there to tell jokes, no matter how clever they are, feels wrong. One that really stood out to me is there was one where it was like an opening episode in which they were all about to die and they were like really coming to terms with their death. And then one character was just giving zingy one-liners and it really made that character, they seemed like a monster, because what kind of monster when people are like confronting their own death would be telling them jokes? And so that was just somebody prioritizing cleverness over really thinking through the honesty of the situation.
Yeah. And the last thing I would just say is always having that sense of like the levity and gravity, I think is really important in all writing and in dialogue as well, which is the idea of, you know, you do want some level of humor, you want some lightness to it, and then you want to bring it back grounded to what your plot is, what it is you're trying to accomplish with that.
Yeah, I think respect the situation and the story you're telling. If it's a situation that allows for jokes, jokes are really good. Or even if it's a situation that's very dark, as long as you make the jokes appropriate for that situation, that like people facing their death might tell each other jokes, but it wouldn't be zingy, it wouldn't be clever. And so just respecting the moment.
Yeah. Let's bring it to a break and then we'll come back with your assignments.
Hello, Joseph here. I have two books coming out this year. Seriously. May 11th, 2021. The first 10 years. Two sides of the same love story. So there is a love story that happened behind the scenes of Welcome to Night Vale between me and Meg Bashwinner, MC and tour manager for the live Night Vale show. In this memoir, we recount the first 10 years of our relationship, year by year, without consulting each other beforehand. It's a funny and romantic story about how differently we experience and remember our lives. Then on July 20th, 2021, the Halloween moon
my first ever novel for ages 10 and up. Esther Gold loves Halloween, until the year that Halloween night just won't end. Even she doesn't want Halloween to last forever. No matter your age, if you are a fan of what I do, I think you're going to love this book. Get these books wherever you get your books.
All right, we're back, you guys. Joseph, why don't you start off our assignments?
So for our consume assignment this week, we want you to listen to episode one at least, but hopefully more of the podcast Steal the Stars. This is a sci-fi thriller fiction podcast by the writer Mac Rogers. It's one that we are both fans of, and we want you to pay close attention to what each line of dialogue in it does. Is it exposition? Is it driving the plot forward? Is it humor? There's a lot of jokes, but the jokes are all built within the situation and within the character that is telling that joke. And is it character? Sometimes the lines that on paper seem to do nothing, they expose some aspect of the character. Is it a reluctance they have? Is it an anxiety they have? Are they trying to hide something, and so they're saying something banal to hide what they're actually thinking? And a lot of these overlap. There can be something that is drives the story forward and is funny, or is character depth but is also driving the story forward. I think that Mac Rogers is someone who has been a playwright for a very long time, and so he has a real mastery of dialogue. So I would really encourage you to listen through Steal the Stars and hear what he's doing with that.
Yeah, I second that. Your create assignment this episode is to write, and then I would say record if you have the inclination. If you're writing dramatic dialogue, if you're writing prose dialogue, you can just write it out. But I was saying, from the point of view of a podcast writer, a two-minute, two-character dialogue.
And for the purposes of writing on prose, I think 2 minutes is about 200 words, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's roughly 200 words.
So if you don't want to record it, think of it as 200 words.
Yeah, perfect. So I'm going to just put some constraints on you, because I just want you to think about the line from the beginning to the end, like through it. Think of the vector, the arc, as it were, of your dialogue. So I took these out of a play that I love, and I'm going to make the first line of dialogue has to be, put the milk on the table. And then I want the last line of your dialogue to be, we are really only at the beginning. So use those two things. Like, that's your first line, put the milk on the table. The last line is, we are really only at the beginning. So think about your medium. Are you writing a play? You want to write a screenplay? Do you want to write just prose? Do you just get maybe just a dialogue? Just write two people going back and forth. But just think about, are you developing character? Are you trying to get the plot from that first line to the last line? Are you really setting the tone for something else? So just think about each line and what those are building for your characters.
Yeah, and you might try, again, this is sort of our bonus assignment thing of, like, if you want to try more, if you want to make it a little harder, you might try doing this multiple times and trying as, like, okay, this time it's going to be kind of a funny sitcom-y thing where it's mostly jokes kind of built around this. And another time, make it a very character-focused one where it's really learning who these two people are. And another one that maybe is a little more story focused, like really respect, put the milk on the table, and we are really only at the beginning as aspects of a story, and try and move us through that story. And if you're really, really good at dialogue, try and do a vernacular thing where you really try and capture two very different ways of speaking. I want you to know I am incapable of doing that. So you don't feel bad if you can't either. But if you can, that's a really an amazing thing, and you should try practicing it.
Yeah, so give that a go, and share those on our member forum when you have them done, and give some feedback and chat up your other fellow members and say productive things to them.
That's all for this episode, but your assignment is just beginning. Head on over to startwiththispodcast.com to join our membership community. Becoming a member allows you to share your assignments with other listeners, talk about what's sparking your creativity, and find future collaborators. Plus, you'll be able to ask follow-up questions about this and future episodes, and gain exclusive access to the episodes where we answer those questions. Membership is just 542 Japanese yen, but you know what? If you're in the U.S., it's only $5. That's all it takes to be part of our membership forum. We can't wait to see what you're working on. Start With This is a production of Night Vale Presents. It is produced by Julia Melfi, editing by Grant Stewart, mixing by Vincent Cascione, theme by Joseph Fink. All other music is by Caged Animals. Find more at cagedanimals.net. Very special thanks to Adam Cecil and Christy Gressman. Check out nightvalepresents.com for more information about this show and all of our other shows. Thank you for listening.
Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Start With This. We will leave you with this as you go off to write your dialogue. Just always remember that practice makes perfect, but
perfection is a mythical concept that is used to beat down artists.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.
They say you shouldn't meet your heroes. I'm Joseph Fink, and I'd like to introduce you to I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats, the show where I meet my hero and have conversations about songwriting, art, and life.
This podcast is going to be weird for me because I'm proud of what I do, but I always try to change the subject if people tell me that my stuff is good.
I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.